Welcome to episode 4 of Tee Talk, the golf podcast brought to you by FlagStick.com. My name is Stefan Tudorf, and we have a lot to get into on this podcast. We're going to wrap up the Honda Classic. We're going to talk about Tiger missing the Arnold Palmer Invitational coming up with a neck injury. And there was a shirtless Canadian golfer on tour that your wife probably saw. But before we get into all that, let's bring in the boys. We have my co-host, PGA professional and editor of Flagstick magazine, Scott McLeod. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. We can't forget our wonderful, amazing producer, Nick. Nick, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. You watch a lot of the golf on the weekend, Nick?
No.
No? All right. Well, let's hop into that. The Honda Classic wrapped up this weekend. Keith Mitchell picking up his first career win on the PGA Tour. Scotty, how'd you enjoy the weekend?
I loved it. I loved watching Keith Mitchell. I mean, obviously the tournament normally has a great field, a little weaker this year, but watching Keith Mitchell pound a golf ball at 188 mile an hour ball speed.
That good?
Yeah, that's real good. That's real good. So, you know, it's always nice to see somebody get their first career win. He's a guy who's well-respected among the players. They really, I think a lot of the players really enjoyed seeing that happen. And you know what? He was clutch. He came down to the end, needed to make that birdie on the last hole, drain that putt from a distance, you know, big celebration. And hey, you know what? You got to have the first win to have a second win. So
that's true. And it's not like he didn't have some intimidating guys on the fourth. When you're playing with Vijay, that I've heard many, many stories of that between him and Tiger, there's no two guys. No one else more intimidating than those two guys on tour.
Yeah, I mean, Vijay's not only a big guy.
Terrifying.
Yeah, he's a guy who's made, you know, hundreds of cuts on the tour. Obviously, one of the most prominent players for wins in his 40s. Not a guy who's probably going to have a lot of conversation with you, especially as a rookie. And to try and stay calm in that situation on a golf course where, you know, there's water on 15 holes. I don't know about you, but that could be a little dicey sometime if you're a rookie and maybe you're a little nervous, but Keith Mitchell handled it very, very well.
Between that, you got Ricky Fowler coming up just a few strokes behind you. You have guys like Brooks Koepka, you know, three-time major champion coming up behind you. It was quite a field that he held off, and he ultimately picked up the win at a very tough golf course at I'm PGA National. What's the name of it again?
It's a PGA National.
Yeah, I nailed it.
Yeah, it's a champion course there. One of their multiple golf courses. They've got four there, and it was renovated a few years ago. It's held a lot of events over the years. The Ryder Cup's been there. The PGA's been there over the years. I wouldn't say it could host those events nowadays, but it is a tough golf course, especially into those trio of holes, which we will not name because I hate saying the name
the
over.
The Bear Trap?
Oh,
you
God.
Don't like that name? Why don't you like the name?
Probably just because we hear it a million times. And I would tell
you,
it
does feel like they're trying to oversell something.
Yeah, a little bit too much. I mean, you know, I heard one writer talk about the golf course being a one-trick pony and the fact that, you know, he was all about that sort of thing. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of attention that's given to those holes and justifiable having played it and rinsed a couple balls there myself. You know what? The theatrics came from the players, not the golf course.
Did you hit one in a pool or was it the water?
It was definitely the water on 15 and 17 as well. But I will tell you, I did make a birdie on 18 after almost visiting the clubhouse on the second shot. So,
wow, man.
I recovered.
Great story.
Terrible story.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Canadian content coming out of the weekend at the Honda Classic. One tweet I saw that really interested me was about Ben Silverman, who at one point was T2 in this tournament coming, I believe, on Friday. But let me read this out to you, Scotty. It comes from an account, Monday Q Info. So it says, shot 118 in a junior event at 16. He was a 12 handicap as a high school senior. He took a year off to practice. He walked on at Johnson and Wales U. That's a pretty prominent university, I'm sure. Missed numerous times at Q school. First year on the web.com. 6 years after turning pro, he finished 149th on the money list. And then in 2017, he picked up his first web win. And then in 2019, at some point, he was T2 at the Honda. So quite the journeyman, Ben Silverman.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just goes to show you that the path is not always a straight one in professional golf. And I will note that Ben Silverman has won more than 30 times on the minor league golf tour, which is based in South Florida. So he knows how to get the golf ball in the hole. Obviously, won on the web.com tour. But if you look at that, most people would assume that, you know, you've got to be a scratch golfer by the age of 12. But you know, Ben came late to the game. And then as you see, you know what, even though he came late to the game, he managed to get himself in this position and be playing on the PGA Tour.
It is impressive. Seeing these things, these type of tweets and stats do kind of terrify me. We all have that friend that probably should have gave up trying to turn pro, where Ben, he probably, a lot of people probably told him that, and he's just like, nope, I'm grinding it out, and good for Ben. He's got pretty much full-time status this year on the tour.
Yeah, I mean, some people maybe hang on a little bit too much, but maybe he saw a little something in his game, and it was enough to kind of push him forward, and obviously he's gotten to where he is now, and, you know, seeing 5 out of 6 Canadians make the cut this weekend was great to see. Unfortunately, you know, nobody finished higher than T30, but a lot of players were getting some attention, and some more than others, especially some TV time.
That is true. Just speaking of Ben Silverman quickly, he was also worked at Golftown at some point, same with me. I mean, my accolades at Golftown are a little bit more than his, being the 2014 Fitter of the Year. But I mean, he's on the PGA Tour, so maybe he won the war.
Yeah, well, he and his caddy, Dave Stone, also worked at Golftown together. And so it's pretty neat that they're actually a team now out there on the PGA Tour. If you think about that, you know, two guys work in retail in golf. If they'd imagined, you know, projecting ahead a few years and the fact that they'd be out on the PGA Tour with some of the best players in the world, you wouldn't think that for sure.
You mentioned another Canadian got some TV time on the weekend. Probably not for what you'd expect a golfer to get TV time. Drew Nesbitt, this guy stripped down into just his pants, had his shirt right off. Great, great golfer's tan. Brought my wife into the room to watch some golf, and he made his first PGA Tour cut this week after Monday qualifying.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to watch. I mean, he was obviously in the hunt to try to make that cut. And the fact that he had to jump in the water, good thing he's a lefty. The only way he was able to really play that shot. Otherwise, he would have been standing on top of a gator to try and hit that shot. It obviously brought him a lot of tension. You know, he makes a par out of that one. And then he had another incredible shot where he skipped the ball across the water. I'm not sure if he saw that one as well, but he certainly got some TV time. Unfortunately, he got taken out in the second cut because they had too many players, but a great to see a young guy, only 23, able to get out there and make that cut on the PGA Tour. And hey, it's a great experience for him, and maybe we'll see him in more events going in the year ahead.
That is true, and the kid's ripped too. He's clearly been in the gym, as I mentioned. Probably the only 3 minutes of golf my wife watched. Nick didn't watch any golf this weekend, but maybe his wife was tuning in. And you know what's funny is we actually have Drew on the podcast today too. Let's why don't we head over to that? That was a great interview with Drew. He talked about his experience this weekend. He's talks a little bit about his career, what led him to the PGA Tour. We're gonna send it over to Drew Nesbitt right about now. Keith Mitchell may have won the golf tournament, but the guy we have on the line right now won the weekend. You may have saw him with his shirt off, making an unbelievable par from the water on his way to his first cut on the PGA Tour. We would like to welcome Canadian professional golfer Drew Nesbitt to Tee Talk. How is it going today, Drew?
It's going great, guys. Thanks for having me. You know, as you said, it was a pretty exciting weekend, and, you know, I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. My wife watched golf this weekend for about 3 minutes when you were on the screen with no tarp on. And I mean, you've clearly been working on the body. I think it worked out for you. How many DMs did you get after the weekend, Drew?
Quite a few, to be honest. my social media followers have gone up exponentially. The coverage was obviously, you know, whether positive or negative, depending on which way you like to view it. But, you know, nonetheless, the exposure was pretty great. And, you know, I got a few kind messages, and, you know, some other people have their own opinions of it. But you know what? You just stick to the positive, and that's all you can do.
Oh, yeah. They can take a lap with that nonsense. It was entertaining. And I mean, the shot alone and that par save that you made there, that was amazing. But let's just start there. Congratulating yourself on making that first cut on the PGA Tour. How does that feel?
You know, it's awesome. You know, at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do, is, you know, make it in these events, play well, make it to the weekend. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I didn't play my best golf Saturday, and I didn't get to play Sunday due to the 54 hole cut. But you know what, it's a great learning experience nonetheless, and I'll take a lot from it. moving forwards. And I have a couple more Mondays coming up before I head down south to South America for the Latin Tour. And, you know, at the end of the day, I made a paycheck and on the PGA Tour, and, you know, that, and that's something to be proud of nonetheless. But, you know, my goal is to, you know, to, you know, hopefully play four rounds next time and, you know, just improve on it.
Did the week feel like a victory right away after the Monday? Because, I mean, we look at the field for that Monday qualifier, it really looked like an opposite field PGA Tour event. So, you know, to get through that, did you think that was, you know, that was a victory already?
Yes and no. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. Every one of them is a great player. You know, they've all earned the right to be there. And I'm not sure if you guys saw the statistics based off that field. I think there was something like 47 PGA Tour wins, and, you know, some guys many millions of dollars earned. And, you know, but at the same time, for me to be confident going in the field with not a, you know, with less of a resume than those types of players, I could take confidence in the fact that, you know, usually the scores week to week on Monday qualifiers are roughly the same, regardless of the names. And, you know, that, that theory can even be applied week to week in the actual tournament itself. So, you know, I figured it was going to take about 65 to get in, you know, regardless of who was playing. And that's exactly what it was.
So how does that week set up for you? I mean, obviously you get in the Monday qualifier. Are you having to, you know, scramble back to your place to get more clothing, or are you already prepared for the week to stay there?
You know, I was prepared. It's about a 4-hour drive from where I live in Florida to West Palm Beach. So, you know, it would be kind of a little bit out of the way to travel all the way there and then, you know, back and then back again for, you know, between Monday night and Tuesday. Especially with, you know, with the week being shortened by one day as it was, you know, having to play the Monday qualifier. And then Wednesday is two pro-ams. So the only day that I would be able to play the golf course is on Tuesday. So I was prepared and, you know, call it confident or cocky, but I believe, you know, I prepared for my success, and that's exactly what happened.
You had somebody step up huge this week for you as well. Your caddy posted you guys couldn't find a cheap place to stay. I don't think people realize how hard it is to grind it out, to be trying to Monday qualify week in, week out, and cost being so expensive. And you had a nice fellow Canadian step up to the plate. Why don't you tell our listeners a story there?
Well, you know, what started out is kind of a joking tweet, you know, in the same time, you know, without kind of a joking meaning behind it. Because like you mentioned, it is very expensive. You know, guys like myself, you know, obviously I'm very fortunate to have parents that can support me, but at the same time, you know, they've spent a lot of money and, you know, it, you know, we're not made of money. So eventually, you know, you do need some support. And Jerry D reached out to us after seeing the tweet and, you know, offered to pay for my hotel, which was, so we ended up getting an Airbnb for the week, which is incredible, you know, for somebody like that to step up and take care of me without knowing me, never meeting me, you know, doesn't know who I am, simply just based off, you know, a tweet that was put out by my caddy, even. I didn't even, you know, to reach that far and ask for some help. He kind of put it out there just because of how expensive everything was. And, you know, I can't thank Jerry enough. We've been in contact personally now, and you know, what he did, I'll never forget, and it made my week possible. Obviously, you know, it goes a long way in helping me trying to reach my dream, and, you know, I'll be forever thankful for it.
And then another weird thing that happened this week. I mean, it seems to be a situation after situation. You played by yourself in your final round as well.
Yeah, I did. You know what? I guess that's what happens when there's an odd number of players. I believe, you know, the PGA Tour pretty much every week does twosome pairings on the weekend. And, you know, there was 83 players. And you know what? Somebody gets left out. And that just happened to be me. I'm not saying that I was chosen to do that. It was just simply the way it finished. You know, the tee times are based off, you know, how the leaderboard shapes up and when you finish. So the guys that, you know, shot the same score as me to make the cut at 2 under, but finished before me, were higher up on that part of the leaderboard. Although we all shot the same score, their names came before mine. And that's just the way it is. And my name, I happened to finish the second to last group on Friday afternoon. So my name kind of fell at the bottom of the leaderboard and I was the one singled out. But you know, that's something you just have to accept and deal with it. And obviously, you know, it's a little strange playing at a tournament, let alone a PGA Tour event alone. But it's happened to Jason Day, you know, so even the best players in the world when, you know, at the Masters, although he did get a playing score, I believe one of the members who has done it before stepped up to play with or offered to play with him. And so he accepted. But, you know, I don't believe that opportunity was presented to me. So, you know, I had to play by myself. And, you know, it was a different experience, something, you know, I definitely won't forget. That's for sure. But, you know, you just got to learn from it and move forward.
How much confidence does this give you heading into the Valspar Monday qualifier? I mean, obviously, it's still the same, you know, the same struggle to get through a Monday qualifier. But, you know, do you feel that little bit more confidence in your ability?
I mean, absolutely. You know, after you've done it before, you know, and played well, it's kind of the same principle and the same routine. You know, you hear Brooks Koepka talk about, you know, I have a routine weekly, how I prepare. And that's kind of the same with me is, you know what, I know how I prepare for golf tournaments. Obviously, you know, in terms of what I do daily throughout the week, especially playing at the PGA Tour level, is something that I need to grow on. And hopefully the more I play in those events, you know, the more I'll be able to dial in my formula and how I prepare. But in terms of a Monday qualifier, it definitely gives you confidence knowing that one, you can do it and shoot those scores, which, you know, a few of my rounds in the past have given me confidence that I can go and shoot those kinds of numbers, you know, 65 and lower. So, but it definitely helps your confidence. And even, you know, going into, you know, future events down the road, whether it be, you know, PGA Latin America, hope maybe web.com, you know, all of these events, just you can build off of this and apply it to all sorts of situations.
You mentioned your parents earlier being a big support behind you. Why don't you share with the listeners a little bit about that? Because I had some experiences with your dad over the years back when I was in the retail business, and he happened to be one of my reps. But he's obviously been one of your biggest fans, biggest supporters, you know, even a coach. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the influence of them and how they've helped you get to where you are today at the age of 23?
Yeah. You know, I don't even know where to start. They're both so influential into me and so in such different ways. And I think it's a, you know, like Tiger and his parents, you know, Tiger's dad being, you know, kind of the hard ass and his mom kind of being the more of the nurturing one. My parents throw maybe a little bit of the opposite, not saying my mom's a hard ass, but my mom, you know, was very strict with me in terms of my mental preparation, my physical preparation, how I prepare week in, week out, and how being diligent about preparation creates success. Whereas my dad was more of the, you know, the physical, swing oriented, you know, how do we prepare on the golf course, you know, caddying for me, coaching me. Having those two different aspects growing up from a very young age, I think kind of shaped me into who I am now. And it's been so incredible, you know, the support my parents have given me of, and obviously, you know, me being their son, they would do it, you know, all over again 100 times. But, you know, I can't thank them enough. I owe them the world. And, you know, they're really the reason why I'm here and how I'm able to do this.
Let's step back a little bit in your path that's actually led you to where you are right now. It's not that long ago you're playing on the Great Lakes Tour in Ontario here. How have you ended up to where you are? Where are you playing? You mentioned the Latino Tour coming up. Let's talk about what your season looks like and how you actually ended up getting to this place in the first place.
Absolutely. So, you know, I took a little bit of an unconventional route. Obviously, so growing up playing hockey, AAA hockey at a very high level, you know, through till I was about 15 years old. You know, golf really was never a priority. It was always a priority in the summer, but never in my grand plan in life. And once I was about 15, 16 years old, it kind of became the priority. And I was a little late, you know, to the party trying to get a scholarship. You know, many of my peers, you know, were going to Division I scholarship schools, top schools even. And I wasn't, you know, quite in that boat, and I had to find a new path. And I decided that I was going to turn pro. Not that I really considered myself, you know, to be a professional golfer at the time, but I figured it was the only way that I was going to learn all of the things I needed to and gain the confidence to try and pursue a career professionally. And it was a rough start. I didn't play very well. I didn't make any money for at least, I think, over a year and a half, maybe 10 to 12 tournaments. And I actually decided that one winter I was not going even to go down south and play golf at all. And I took the winter off and I got a job. And then, you know, within our family, we decided, you know, to take a look at what the big problem was. Why couldn't I shoot the scores to make a paycheck playing golf at the lowest level of professional golf, which is mini tour golf that, you know, anybody, if they chose to, could play. And we felt that my putting was very poor, especially at the professional level. And I went to see Dave Stockton Jr. in California for 3 hours one day. We flew out there with my dad, and the next tournament I played was the Great Lakes Tour Shootout in, I believe it was 2016, and I won it. And it was still the joke of the day because I actually didn't make a paycheck, but I earned.
You got entry fees though out of that one, did that? Yeah,
exactly. And that was then that really made a difference. You know, covered all my entry fees for that year, and I happened to win, I believe, once more, maybe twice more, with some other good finishes. And that was kind of the jump start where I'm like, you know what? Okay, I can maybe do this. And then, you know, a couple more years went by, and then I Monday qualified into the Canadian Open, and I missed the cut by one shot. And that was the turning moment for me where I know, you know what? I can do this. I can play with the best players in the world. I just need to refine my game and get it to a consistent elite level. And, you know, now, I believe that I'm coming, you know, into that full swing where it's, you know, I can do it week in and week out. And then when it's not my best game, I can still compete. It took me a few, and then I went to Mackenzie Tour Q School twice, both times unsuccessful. I've played European Tour qualifying school three times, all three times unsuccessful. But I went to Latin America and I chose to try something new, something that I haven't done before, which is, you know, play golf in a, you know, different continent, obviously going to Europe, but I mean, being unsuccessful, you know, I didn't get to stay there. So when I went and qualified for the Latin America tour last year, that was my first time, you know, playing tournament golf, over a period of time outside of North America. And I learned to travel. I learned to, you know, be resourceful. I learned to practice on the road. I learned to, you know, to meet new guys and create relationships.
And you also learned how to shoot 59, correct?
Yes. Well, there's actually more to that. That was the second time I've done it.
Really? When was the first one?
In a practice round for the Osprey Valley Monday qualifier. So I shot 59 in the practice round. And turned around the next day and shot 71 and missed by two, I believe.
Nick just looked at me like, that's good, but he doesn't realize we're not talking about nine holes.
Yeah, no.
Let's say our producer doesn't play a lot of golf.
No, 18 holes of golf. The only criticism I have to myself was both of them were 12 under par, par 71. So I'm yet to do it on a par 72 golf course.
That's too
bad. Although there's certainly no complaining involved. At the end of the day, you know, to shoot 59 once, let alone twice, you know, I mean, obviously I really only count the one in the tournament, as I should, but you know, it was pretty cool.
That experience, you know, how was that coming down to the end of that round, you know, knowing where you're at in your game? Were you able to keep yourself calm? Were you keep yourself focused? Or was it something that, you know, you're kind of jumping out of your skin?
No. I think it was maybe I was excited. I thought it was awesome. You know, obviously, my first round was really, really poor. And, you know, it was a lot. The score was a lot worse than I played. You know, to shoot 79, but I really didn't play a bad round of golf. I hit two bad shots and then made a couple, you know, not great decisions, you know, going for certain flags on the back nine, and it just kind of spiraled out of control. And, you know, and then I knew, well, I had nothing to lose the next day, and I figured I had to shoot 62 or 61, I think, something like that. And, you know, I started the first hole, made eagle the second hole, you know, made a three putt bogey on the next. And I'm like, you know what? All right, just keep going. And then things started to get crazy. So I made an eagle on the 18th hole, which was my ninth hole. I started on the 10th hole. I birdied the first. I aced the second. Birdied the third.
Wow.
And then I realized, I'm like, oh my goodness, one more birdie and I can make the cut. And it took me a couple holes to do it. And then once I actually made a birdie on the seventh hole, And, you know, I'm like, all right, this is great. I'm 10 under par. I think this is good enough to make the cut. And then we get to the eighth hole and I'm in the middle of the fairway and I was going to play it safe, you know, to the middle of the green. And my caddy, you know, who didn't really speak much English because we were in Brazil. And I looked at him and I said, middle. And he goes, no, right at the flag. And I hit it to 6 feet and made it. And then the last hole, I'm like, well, now I have to be aggressive. I knew a three would be good enough for 59. And I, you know, happened to make three. And I knew the whole way that it was on the ninth hole, what a three was going to mean. I knew it was going to be 59. You know, I was conscious of it. But I just was excited. I'm like, you know what? You're playing good. There's no reason to be nervous. You know, at the end of the day, if you got nervous and tightened up, you wouldn't do it anyways. So, you know, give it your best chance. If you can pull it off, great. And if you couldn't, I was still going to make the cut at that point, even with a par on the last hole. So I figured, you know, why not? Let's go for it.
Let's talk about life on the Latin American tour. I don't think listeners really realize how much travel is involved, how hard it is out there. What is life like when you're traveling from Panama to Argentina to Chile to Jamaica? How do you do it? How is that lifestyle?
You know, it's a little crazy, definitely. But I think you just kind of learn to accept it as it comes and take it one day at a time, you know, one flight at a time. You know, at the end of the day, you do get used to it. You know, the flights at first were long, you know, tiring, trying to find, you know, the places to stay, different language, different food. But as you get used to it, and I had a great group of guys to travel with, it makes it a lot easier, you know, and then especially having been down there for a year now and you kind of get familiar with a certain places. But you also have to have an open mind. It's definitely not for everybody. Even, you know, in some of my friends, you know, they're certainly not open to that kind of travel and that kind of lifestyle. You know, it's definitely different. It's not North America. You know, the places, you know, might look not as nice. The golf courses might not, you know, be as manicured as we're used to here in North America. You know, the food might not be, you know, as pretty looking, you know, although I do say I'm making it sound a little worse than it is because I love Argentina. I thought it's a very beautiful, beautiful, beautiful country. The Cordoba, especially, you know, is awesome. The golf course is awesome. The people are nice. And Brazil, same thing. You know, we were in Sao Paulo and it's incredible to think that Sao Paulo is 22 million people and Canada is 36 million people. Their one city is almost the size of our country in terms of population. You know, so it's quite different, but at the same time, if you have an open mind and enjoy it, then, you know, there's no reason that it's not enjoyable.
Any situations where maybe one of those food groups that you haven't had in life wasn't sitting too well as you're grinding it out in a 4-day tournament?
You know what? Not for me. You know, I'm, knock on wood, I'm pretty.
I think I just jinxed you. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, but although I did go and consult with a doctor before I went down there, and he gave me some pills that I would prevent me from, you know, having some ill-favored issues with food. But I've been pretty lucky, and I do have a little bit of an iron stomach, I believe, and I'm pretty good with food. I like to try new things, and you know, it doesn't bother me. So,
do you think, you know, playing that tour and playing the circumstances, you mentioned the manicured as far as the golf course is not being maybe the same condition you would have faced, you know, at the Honda Classic or whatever, but do you think that helps you in the fact that maybe you've got to adapt and you sort of accept less than perfect and you just sort of do your thing?
Yes and no. But I think it's a little bit more about me having experience, you know, growing up on not perfect conditions rather than having to adapt once I'm there. And I think that's the difference. You know, I grew up playing a really nice golf course in Horseshoe Valley, the Highlands course and the Valley course. But as of 2011, my father was a partner in Shanty Bay Golf and Country Club, just near our home in Horseshoe. And, you know, it's just your typical cottage golf course. You know, it's not a country club, you know, where the greens are, you know, 11 and a half and perfect every day, right? So I learned to play on subpar conditions and accept, you know, the greens to be a little slower and a little bumpier. And that's, so when I come across that in South America, and I'm, and this isn't every tournament, there are a lot of tournaments where we play, the greens are very good and very fast, but, you know, not every single tournament is like that. So I've come, I think it's my preparation and kind of, you know, the acceptance of it from before I get there, rather than having to adapt once I am there. And that makes it, you know, doable for me.
I mean, really, you know, it's a small town story and obviously you're having great success. How much more attention are you getting now than maybe you've had in the last little while? And do you think, you know, you'll get some other corporate opportunities or maybe some support out of this?
I think, you know what, the people that that want to follow me, that want to pay attention are, and I'm doing my best to, you know, make sure that I keep them in the loop and support them, and they, you know, understand that everything, all the positive feedback is so appreciated. In terms of the corporate support, you know what, I take it one day at a time. And right now, you know, my main focus is my golf, not, you know, corporate franchising and trying to promote myself to businesses. If, you know, if I was approached, you know, from in that aspect, you know, it's obviously everything's in consideration, but, you know, right now my main focus is my golf. And it's something, you know, that I talk to my friends about, is that, you know, winning takes care of a lot of things. Good golf takes care of a lot of things. So if that's your focus, rather than, you know, I just, you know, made the cut at the Honda Classic, and now I want to look for, you know, sponsors and everything to help me, which would be great. But at the same time, you know, if you Monday qualify into the Valspar and you play great golf, you know, and earn a big paycheck, then, you know, you're helping yourself and your own cause rather than looking for other people to help you. And I think that's my main goal, and it's always has been, is help myself do it. You know, don't look for the easy way out. And I think that's what's helping me succeed, rather than, you know, just looking for support and kind of being like, you know, I need some help. I help myself, and then other people will help you.
Well, Drew, we'll be supporting you all the way through. I know my wife's going to be watching every PGA Tour event from here on out, hoping you're going to pop up on the screen. I think it's kind of a problem. but we're going to see you in Belleville later on this summer. Is that correct? You're attending the Pro-Am tournament they're having there.
Absolutely, yeah. I've played it the last 2 years. Jody Jenkins, you know, is great. You know what he does for the charity. I believe last year was Big Brothers Big Sisters. I don't know if it's the same this year or not. But nonetheless, I'm a huge supporter of what they do, you know, and I'm happy to be there and happy to help out. At the end of the day, you know, we're the ones that get to play golf professionally, and there's a lot of people who are not as fortunate as us. And, you know, it's our job to give back, and, you know, hopefully one day my personal platform will be big enough to follow in footsteps like those people and create a charitable foundation in my own name. But obviously, you know, first things first, you know, you have to create that platform, and that's my goal.
Well, we will see you out there. Let us know if you need a looper in the event. Either one of us are more than willing to hop on the bag. We appreciate it. Good luck as you try to get into the Valspar in a couple weeks. And even better luck going forward on the Latin America Tour. First tournament, I believe, for you is coming up March 27th, correct?
Yeah, that would be correct. I am committed to play. Although I will correct one thing. I am playing the Corrales Punta Cana Monday qualifier on March 11th before the Valspar. It's an interesting Monday qualifier. They do it 2 weeks prior. So, barring I play my way into that tournament, I will be playing in Panama to start the season.
Awesome, buddy. Well, we wish you good luck. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, and we hopefully catch up with you soon in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys, and I look forward to seeing you this summer.
Thank you, Drew, for joining us on Tee Talk. What an amazing interview. Good young lad, fit and shape, bringing out everybody into the DMs, as he mentioned there. But he's obviously taking a little bit of a different approach here. He has status on the Latino America Tour. He's still trying to Monday qualify in many PGA Tour events, the next couple coming up, obviously the Valspar. quite the different path. There's a lot of Canadians out there trying to grind it out right now.
Yeah, I think that's what people sort of forget. I mean, they see the players that are already out there on the tour, but, you know, they had to start someplace as well. Drew at 23, I think, is maybe a little ahead of the curve in the fact that he's made a cut and he's got in that event. And you know, he's obviously played in a Canadian Open as well. But I think if people just sort of, you know, dig a little deeper than just the top of the leaderboard and what they see, they'll find that there's, you know, there's dozens of young Canadians like him out there that are striving to play on the top tours in the world. And you know, you pay attention to them now, you might be surprised where they get to years from now.
And you pay attention to all the Q School, all the Monday qualifying. You're always tweeting out who's made it into an event, whether that's web.com event or a PGA Tour event. You know the talent out there. Who should we be watching right now, Scotty?
Well, I mean, if we look at those Canadians, I mean, you know, if I look at 10 guys that are playing a Q School, you know, just this past week on the Canadian tour, I see, you know, guys like Lucas Kim that played the Mackenzie tour before. There's just, you know, it's just endless. I mean, it goes deep. I mean, I could name off 100 names probably. I probably won't because I probably forget them all. But I mean, if I see from the women's side of it, you know, Jennifer Haugh, who had some status before, she's coming up. She's playing on Symetra Tour. Maddie Zirik, who's on the Symetra Tour right now. Maud-Amy LeBlanc, who was on the LPGA Tour, who's back on, you know, Symetra. I mean, we've got lots and lots of talent out there. And then, you know, at a collegiate level, there's more of them coming up. It's almost nonstop. I could sit there every day and be just digging through all the mini tours, the Outlaw Tour and the, you know, the National Women's Golf Association Tour. And I will always run into 5 or 6 Canadian names there. So we have a lot of players that are, you know, trying to make their way up in the tours. And it's certainly some stories to follow.
The Outlaw Tour brought to you by Harley-Davidson.
The Outlaw Tour is a great one. I mean, we have a lot of Canadians that go out there and play. And Drew is a great example. He's somebody who's played out there. And I think Aaron Cockrell, another Canadian, he's played out there on that Outlaw Tour. I think he might have got a win. And there's a Cactus Tour out west as well. I mean, Golden State Tour. There's a many, many, many tours. And if you just go and if, you know, the websites are smart and they've got, you know, Canadian flag or they've got flags of the nations next to it, you'll end up finding a lot of Canadians.
And a lot of the Canadians that you see on the PGA Tour right now, they follow that same path. We have Adam Hadwin, we got David Hearn, you know, the big names out there. I'm throwing you on the spot here. Haven't heard Graham Dillette's name in a while. Any updates on what he's up to right now?
Well, he's still injured, but he's said he's very hopeful that he's going to get back and play on the PGA Tour this year. He's been active a little bit lately on Twitter with some of his workouts. And
he blocked me.
Well, you know, it's probably because you're not a Flames fan,
I tripped
right?
The Flames.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That'll do it. But, you know, things have been really positive in the fact that he's actually working out, which is nice to see that, you know, he's capable of doing that. And hopefully we're going to see him at Ancaster at Hamilton Golf and Country Club for the Canadian Open. And, you know, we have a bunch of Canadians that are out on the PGA Tour right now. But, you know, having Graham Dillette back out there would be great for a lot of fans of his.
Next week in the PGA Tour, we have the Arnold Palmer Invitational. There's some great groups out there this week. We are looking at some of the featured groups starting on Thursday and Friday. However, the big story coming out already is that Tiger, who previously had committed to this tournament, is no longer going to be in attendance as he's citing a neck injury. A lot of people freaking out, Scotty. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think maybe he just needs a little bit of rest. I mean, you know, he hasn't played a full schedule like this in a while. And you know, a neck tweak, anybody gets a neck tweak. I mean, you know, you sleep the wrong way on a pillow, you can get a neck tweak. People are going to freak out a little bit more because it's Tiger. And obviously, he's got a history of that injury. But, you know, he's reassured people that, you know, it's got nothing to do with his lower back. And everything seems to be fine that way. And, you know, he's saddened. You know, this is a tournament at Bay Hill that he's won 8 times. But he's hoping to be back in the field at the Players Championship, and who knows, he's had some magic there as well. So hopefully he gets 100% and back to fine form real soon.
Yeah, as you said, there's a number of different ways you can hurt your neck. We don't need to get into those on this podcast. We do hope he's back out there next week at the Players, but there is a lot of people to watch out for this week. Rory's back in the field. Patrick Reed's in the field. I believe they're playing together, if I'm not mistaken. And Rory won the tournament last year. Am I not correct?
Yeah, I mean, you've got
he's playing great right now, too.
You've got a talented field, and the fact that, you know, it is an invitational tournament. These players respect Arnold Palmer. They respect the legacy he has in the game. And, you know, this week the PGA Tour renamed their Rookie of the Year award to the Arnold Palmer Award, which is nice to see. A great honor, especially with Bay Hill. And they've got some new experiences at Bay Hill as well. They've got a new immersive Arnold Palmer experience for the fans to go and see, to sort of, you know, pay homage to what he's done for the game. And that's part of the reason why the Players want to be there as well. It's in respect for Arnold Palmer.
Obviously, Tiger's not in the field. There is a strong field out there. It's worth watching. See if Rory can defend his title at Bay Hill, and anything to honor Arnold Palmer, as he really did give everything to these guys have right now. There are also is a lot of Canadians in the field this week. Who do we got, Scotty?
Corey Connors is in the field, Adam Hadwin, and then Roger Sloan, who was actually the first alternate, slipped into the field as well. So we've got a trio to watch at Bay Hill, and hopefully they play well.
Adam Hadwin, he's got to pull through at some point here and pick up his first win. It seems every other week he's in the top 10 at some point.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fantastic player, and he's got Vijay in his pairing for the first couple days, so that should be interesting as well. I think he'll be pretty comfortable that way, and he's so talented. A lot of other players actually look to him to be a guy who's going to break out and do something really good real soon. So
he's coming. Nice to see Vijay around a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 56 years old, he's chasing that win. Sam Snead's got the record at 52 years old winning. I think that was his 8th Greensboro Open when he won that. Back when I was in high school, you guys are probably joking.
1953.
Yeah, I'll throw that joke in for you. But yeah, just for him being out there, it just proves the golf ball doesn't know how old you are. And, you know, for him to go out there and do that at the age of 56, that's pretty impressive.
He's just a beast in the gym. It doesn't hurt, that's for sure. He's just an intimidating guy from head to toe. I'm cheering for Vijay. He's kind of a jerk at times, but whatever. I think it'd be a cool story to see him win again. Maybe this week. You never know. Keep an eye on it. He's playing with Adam Hadwin, as we mentioned, and hopefully we can see either one of those guys at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the week. This is a great time to wrap it up. We appreciate you listening to episode 4 of Tee Talk. And remember, folks, when you're near the water, take off that shirt. Have a good one.